ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Tammy Shipley believed someone was out to hurt her.
I thought someone was after me and I wanted to just be safe.
She's put under 24-hour surveillance.
I tried to get in contact multiple times.
I just need to make a phone call. Nobody knows where I am.
And then something strange happens.
She just drank and drank and had something like 20 litres of pure water.
Ambulance emergency.
I've got a woman unconscious.
Tammy's story. Search Background Briefing on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Australians have woken up. That's the message from Pauline Hanson, who has delivered her highly anticipated National Press Club address. The One Nation leader linked housing issues to immigration, railed against multiculturalism, calling for a monoculture, labelled net zero a hoax, and called out other parties for copying her ideas. And while Pauline Hanson said she's always listening to Australians and welcomed scrutiny, did the speech meet the moment? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvalis.
And I'm David Spears.
David, wow, it was quite the speech. You were in the room. I was watching glued to the television and glued for a little longer than I expected, David, because Pauline Hanson gave a speech which was nearly an hour long. Now, the protocol at the National Press Club is a 30-minute speech, 30 minutes of questions. Mm-hmm. She went way over, which I think really set the tone of the thing because it's, and I just, don't know, I thought it was a bit wild, to be honest, to take
little,
up that much space.
Dare I say, a little Trumpy to go into such a lengthy speech. But unlike Trump, who goes on, what do they call it, the weave, where he leaves the script.
There was
and goes,
no weave.
There was no weave. I had an advanced copy of the speech, so I was reading along. And perhaps more than any speaker I've seen at the press club, Pauline Hanson stuck word for word to what was written down. So the whole speech was delivered as written. There was no weave, but it was just a very long speech. Yes,
it was. Now, thankfully, journalists and Pauline Hanson ensured that the questions were asked at the normal level. I was a little like worried. Is the scrutiny bit going to happen, not just the stump speech? It did. However, you could also critique the fact that she got like an hour and a half on national television, not just the hour everyone else gets. And I'm sure that will be discussed. The other big moment, of course, was beyond the content, there was the unveiling of a get-up. You were in there. Just tell us what actually happened.
Just more than another big moment, PK. This was it. This was the biggest moment, I think, of the day. I've been in that room at the National Press Club when you know people have got up to shout or protest or heckle, and I've seen Morris Riley, the CEO of the National Press Club, literally have to drag people out from the room when that happens. I have never seen anything quite as sophisticated. Is that the word? Clever, cunning. Depending on your
well
perspective.
Well executed.
For those who missed it, Pauline Hanson's there. There's a National Press Club backdrop behind her. And then we hear this and a banner unfurls automatically. I suspect someone pressed a remote and it unfurls. Huge banner, which I had a picture of Pauline Hanson saying, I opposed a pay rise for workers while I took a $100,000 pay rise for myself. This was when she moved to the cost of living section of her speech. So this big banner unfurls automatically. The problem was for the National Press Club that it looked like, I mean, well, clearly someone had installed something, right? Had installed an automatic unfurling banner type of thing. That's the technical term. Prior to today's address. When? How? I mean, this was not done by the National Press Club. Morris Riley was furious. They ripped it off the thing as soon as they could. There's an investigation already been announced by the National Press Club. I understand they're going to have a meeting tomorrow. GetUp's already confirmed it was them, so we know who the culprit was. But how on earth did they do it? I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you what I think of what they did, though. Own goal. And I'll tell you why I think it's an own goal. Pauline Hanson was delivering the part of her speech which was you know, I'll decode it for you. I care about battlers who are eating out of bins. And I say eating out of bins because that was her example. And she was talking about people on the poverty line. And she was pretty, you know, it was kind of a heroic moment in many ways.
It was almost emotional.
For her.
Almost emotional.
She got emotional, yeah. Absolutely. Now, I saw the zoomed up picture. You're in the room. You know, yep. Actually, that's the benefit sometimes of the TV,
yeah,
right?
No,
so
true.
I saw the boomed up. I saw her eyes tear up because she was, you know, the anger, shock, emotion. And it made her more emotional as she delivered word for word a speech that had been prepared in a way that was quite authentic. So actually, I reckon it helped her speech.
Do you think?
I do. I am sure of it. It helped her with a level of authenticity, and that's why I think it's an own goal, because I get the point of the protest. I get the point they're making. I just don't think it helped her.
Well, just quickly, I think from GetUp's point of view, I do think this was probably, you know, I'm not condoning it at all. I think it's terrible for the press that, you know, it takes many years to convince Pauline Hanson to front up and then this happens. But from GetUp's point of view, what are they all about? They're about trying to generate donations to their cause, a progressive cause, to bring, and they've got this big target now in One Nation that's helping them raise money, you know, rake in the donations so that they can mount campaigns. And I just don't think this will hurt GetUp's cause to have pulled off something quite as clever as that today.
Yeah, but if their cause is demolishing the political credentials of this woman, allowing her to get teary and emotional about the most disadvantaged Australians? Mm. I don't know. I still think it's an own goal. I'm just going to stick to that line because I felt it. You know when you feel something viscerally in your bones? I thought, this is her most powerful moment. She looked defiant.
I think when you couple that, just to stick with what the point of the sign was, you know, I opposed a pay rise for workers. Labor's been running this line, you know, since One Nation emerged as a serious threat to Labor as well. She opposed the most recent minimum wage increase. She always opposes, you know, benefits for battlers is kind of Albanese's point. And one of the great questions up the top was from Mark Riley from the Seven Network along those lines. Mm-hmm. And he listed off a whole range of things that are there to help battlers that One Nation has opposed. And she went in her answer straight to, we need an industrial relations overhaul. Businesses, yep. I talk to, bosses I talk to tell me it's too hard. She was siding with the bosses over the battlers in that moment.
Okay, so let's go to that. So we're going to go to some of the substance. Let's go to that. Because she gave the unions what they wanted.
That's what I'm saying. You can see what the unions.
It wasn't because of the banner.
Well, I think, okay.
It was because of the question.
Sure, but it all fits in the theme, doesn't it, of whether Pauline Hanson is legitimately backing and supporting battlers or not.
Yes.
And, you know, whether the banner, but it's all about the same thing. And I don't think she did well on that today, on this issue of whether she's actually supporting battlers. Sure, there was a bit of emotion in her face when she talked about people eating from bins and not being able to afford medicines and so on. And she had a whole list of, you know, statistics that she read out. But when it comes to what has she actually done in the parliament, you can see where this is a vulnerability. And that answer where she talked about, well, we need an IR overhaul to give bosses a better go at running their businesses.
It is too hard to sack people, that line.
Yep.
So you can see the union scare campaign. She wants you sacked. People are playing on their phones, she said. Now, that's a really resonant message, I think, for some bosses who might be frustrated. But I don't imagine it's a resonant message for workers, is it? She also opposed the pay rise for childcare workers today. Is that a resonant message for the childcare workers that may have been wanting to vote for One Nation, but she says they shouldn't get their pay rise? So on those issues, I think you're right. She's played into the hands of the union movement, the Labor Party, and that is how they want to frame her. Let's talk about what she wanted to talk about. And I did note many of the questions did not actually go very much to this theme, and that is multiculturalism, monoculturalism, language spoken at home. That was in the sort of substance of her speech, which is kind of the greatest hits of One Nation in some ways. But now that they're polling so high, I think those messages carry different levels of importance. So when she says that, and she singled out two languages, Mandarin and Arabic, as being spoken at home in high numbers and being a problem, I thought that again creates a vulnerability for her because there are many people who are of many diverse backgrounds who've been absolutely dancing with One Nation. They may be very irritated with the government and the coalition, but speaking your language at home is a pretty basic kind of linguistic right.
Yeah, so I think, you know, clearly there's been a lot of anxiety around migration levels being too high. Clearly that has helped fuel One Nation's rise. Clearly when Pauline Hanson talks about the size of our population, not having enough housing, this creating all sort of stresses for so many families, that has resonance. That is a reason why we've seen this rise and rise of One Nation. That's absolutely. But then to take that to the next steps of this debate from Pauline Hanson and say things like she said today, we cannot be a multicultural society. We must be monocultural. To say that, as you point out, she has a problem with speaking languages other than English at home, that you should be learning English before you're even allowed to come here. This is, I think, where, look, I never like to get into political predictions, but you can see the view from Labor and some of the Liberals is One Nation will hit a demographic wall on some of this stuff, because there are parts of Australia that, sure, might have concerns that we've got too much migration, but the idea that we should be monocultural, that we shouldn't have people speaking Mandarin or Arabic at home, that's not going to go down well with many Australians. So it'll be just interesting to see how that plays, taking that debate into this new terrain.
I think it carries lots of landmines for her, David. So watch that space, because it does provide, I think, fertile territory to exploit by her political opponents when she is, as I say, genuinely being quite resonant in multicultural communities. I think that's part of her growth, that it's not just a white Australia movement anymore. There are diverse Australians who've been interested in her ideas. So as soon as she alienates them by, and a few people have been fact-checking some of that, some things she wants to say, as someone who grew up in a family that where another language was exclusively actually spoken in our case at home, you'll find that often those households, I think it's important to say, are multilingual. So in my house, I spoke, English to my sisters, Greek to my parents and grandparents. You know what I mean? Like that, so a couple of languages. Isn't that nice? The other thing that I think was key in her speech is we saw very Trumpian attack on the media.
Yep.
And that, again, is in the ballywick of her message. That there was also that tangle, I think, with a Guardian journalist, who's been really writing a lot about, Sarah Martin's been writing a lot about One Nation, and that was kind of almost a sort of menacing moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, so there were a couple of moments. One was in the set piece speech before the end, after the Press Club President Tom Connell had given her the hurry up. Pauline Hanson wanted to finish the last few pages, and that included the stuff about the SBS, about SBS and ABC. Abolish SBS because there are apparently, with the internet, you can access enough international news. Anna Henderson from SBS pointed out that SBS provides a lot of Australian news in language for various people. And ABC would remain as it is in regional Australia, but for you and I, PK, and those in urban areas, it would be a subscription model to pay for the ABC. We've heard this before from Pauline Hanson. That wasn't a surprise, but look, clearly she wanted to make a point of saying that they're at the National Press Club and having a go at the media more broadly for pylons, as she put it, even threatening that come election campaign time, there might be some restricted access to her based on what people are actually reporting. But then you had that clash with Sarah Martin, as you mentioned. So Sarah Martin is a highly respected journalist. Sarah Martin has worked at a number of outlets. She was a long-time panellist on Insiders, I should point out. I think she's a great journalist. Pauline Hanson called her a trashy journalist when she asked a pretty legitimate question about Pauline Hanson's daughter being employed by a New South Wales One Nation senator, but living and campaigning in Tasmania, where she plans to run again for One Nation. In other words, taking taxpayers' money to essentially campaign. Pauline Hanson ripped into that question and to Sarah Martin in particular. That was a bit Trumpy. Going after journalists plays well with supporters. And look, I don't doubt that this moment and having a crack at the ABC and the media generally, that won't hurt Pauline Hanson amongst those supporting her.
It's what she's been saying for a while. There was another moment too, though. I just think telling Anna Henderson that she won't have a job, because there was just a few of those moments, which again, are all very Trumpian, right? But again, they're within her playbook. They're the greatest hits. They're not new. What they're new in is being in that space, in that theatre, with mainstream legacy journalists and saying those things. That's the difference, and that gives it a different optics, I think, right? In terms of, you know, what she's trying to achieve in this speech, do you think she would have thought this was a good hit out today?
Yes, I do think she would have thought that, that she's fronted up to the National Press Club, to the senior journalists in Canberra, taken their questions, delivered a speech, held her head high. I think she will see this as a win. And look, I don't doubt that moments of defiance that we saw from Pauline Hanson will go down well with a lot of Australians that we're seeing in the polls backing One Nation because they're fed up with the system. They want change. I think talking about all of those cost of living concerns that, that people have will resonate. Where I think there's vulnerability for Pauline Hanson is on the detail of policy and whether this is really an alternative government, not just on industrial relations, not just on tax and foreign policy, the sort of things we just expect governments to be, you know, competent to handle. But even things like abortion came up as well. And you can see where suddenly Pauline Hanson's on a bit of sticky paper here and suggests that she doesn't want to support abortions beyond 20 weeks. You can see where that could be problematic as well. So I think, there's never enough time for those detailed questions, but the time that we had did reveal areas of comfort for Pauline Hanson, but areas of confusion and vagueness as well. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think abortion is always dangerous territory to go to because if you look at public polling on abortion, it is overwhelmingly supported by Australians. Now, she was talking about, you know, aborting a baby the day before it's meant to be born. She kept bringing it back to that. Now, which is something we have to say that is, you know, not, that's not what the abortion debate and rights is about. But when you talk about it like that, of course, that is really emotive, David. You know, people feel very uncomfortable at that for the right reasons, right? And so that's the kind of way the abortion debate often morphs. However, she was drawn in on this and she basically suggested it was wrong earlier. And I think that's where it is dicey territory for her. I do suspect, though, that you won't hear her talking a lot about abortion going forward. I don't think it's really going to be one of the bread and butter issues for One Nation. It's not why people are parking in the One Nation column at the moment.
Well, look, maybe she'll be careful on that ground, but when she's asked, she says it. And, you know, one of her most high-profile colleagues, Barnaby Joyce, he's pretty passionate about it, PK, as you know. You know, he popped up at a rally at outside New South Wales Parliament on this issue specifically. I think you interviewed him, didn't you, the next day about it. So, look, you know, within her ranks, there are some pretty strong views on these sort of things. The transgender issues as well got a run from Pauline Hanson. Again, we've heard this stuff before, but likening the transgender insurgency, she called it, to Islamic extremism, it's, you know, it's pretty wild stuff.
It's so over the top. Now, one of the things that Pauline Hanson tries to lean in on is that because she is the leader of this, you know, right-wing party, she can lean in very heavily on issues like trans, abortion. It is something that a Liberal leader, right now Angus Taylor, does have to be more careful about. He does have, it's not overwhelmingly large anymore, but he still does have a moderate base that tries to pull him back, has to think about kind of more mainstream voters. Pauline Hanson is showing us in her outing at the press club that she's not afraid to do that and still be a broad-based political party, which she's trying to do. That is the big question, whether that can fly, David. That's the thing that we don't know yet. Now, we've had a few examples, I think, where we thought, oh, maybe it can. But if you look at Farah, if you look, you know, at the South Australian election, these issues have not been overwhelmingly emphasised. When these issues are, that's the big test. Because the reason you don't hear Angus Taylor bang on about these things nonstop, he does a little bit, puts his big toe in, but then pulls it out again, is because the sort of mantra has always been, it's the economy, stupid, don't focus on that stuff too much, it's fringe stuff. She can and she does, but will it work?
Yeah, and when you mention that, it, you know, just makes me realise too that the Angus Taylor reaction to so many of these things we heard today from Pauline Hanson will be fascinating as well. We know the Liberals, and particularly under Angus Taylor, have shifted to chase One Nation on everything from net zero to, well, even the transgender issue as well. Angus Taylor's now publicly backing legislation on this to protect the rights of women. But yeah, it will be interesting. Does he now get asked and pressed for a position on abortion, which, I'm sure, like Peter Dutton, he doesn't want to open up that can of worms. But does he get pushed on things like multiculturalism versus monoculturalism, speaking Mandarin and Arabic at home, and whether we should have much, much stronger English language requirements so people aren't speaking other languages at home? You can just see that contest on, because he's never going to be able to outflank One Nation, but that doesn't mean it won't be difficult for him.
She was asked some questions I thought worth touching on for us. And I know the nerds that listen to this pod won't mind us going here, which is kind of the architecture and infrastructure of her party. And the reason that's important is, you know, the history of One Nation is riddled with bad recruits that are kind of a bit dodgy, exposing the party as a bit dodgy and then hurting her chances. Mm. And she's now embarked on basically being, allowing branches to exist again. They've got all these new systems, whiz bang systems, to try and ensure that this doesn't bring her down. I thought the way she answered that was really interesting. And I've got to say, I was a bit sympathetic to her on this, and I'll explain. Journalists do look for, stories where there are some dodgy figures and the rotten egg. And what she was saying is she doesn't want to be linked to some of these characters. And that's why she's been so worried about kind of allowing democracy to flourish under her in the past. And her very much command and control structure of the party has been because this does dog her and happens. I mean, that is kind of a bit legit, isn't it? I sound overly sympathetic?
No, look, you can understand. Yeah, I mean, there was one line where she said in response to one of these questions, that's why I have to be in total control of it. Right, the party and its branches, which sounds just so authoritarian when you compare it to the other major parties and how structurally they operate. Their parliamentary leader is not in total control of the branches. But given the problems that we've seen in One Nation, and she's acknowledged them, you can sort of see why they want to have that command and control there, right? So damned if you do, damned if you don't. But given where they are at right now in wanting to keep extremists out, if it's not Pauline Hanson, someone has to be keeping a pretty firm hand on that.
So has she made herself more electable in the public? Will this help her rise even further in the opinion polls, or will it hamper her? Because right now, I know, I'm seeing on my phone, I've got Liberal MPs who think, well, this is useful, today's outing, for them to be a bit, to people to see what she stands for that might help them. That is the view that they have. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, look, again, I hate to make predictions about whether this will help or hurt in the polls, One Nation. But, I think we've touched on the vulnerabilities, and I think I would predict one thing. Labor and the coalition probably won't go after the migration, multiculturalism, language you speak at home stuff overtly. They'll be very happy for others to do that. And I can tell you, behind the scenes, plenty of them are pointing to the wonderful display of multiculturalism we've seen with the Socceroos at the World Cup and, hoping that that will be a great contrast to the sort of Australia that Pauline Hanson's talking about. What I do think Labor and the Coalition will focus on is, for Labor, what we were talking about when it comes to the battlers and what Pauline Hanson's now saying about industrial relations and giving the bosses a better a stronger hand in the workplace. They'll go after that. You can see similarly areas where the coalition might, on the policy front, feel they have some strength now to go after One Nation. I just think they'll be very careful about going after her on migration and multiculturalism. Do you think?
Yeah, but there is, as I say, a lot of kind of potential scare campaign that can be run in a lot of cohorts in the community about what this party would do. And I can see that being at a subterranean level, something that's pursued. But watch this space. I think the Prime Minister will be careful not to bite too much into the Hanson territory, because the playbook of populists around the world, it's politics 101 actually, is to get people on your turf David. Hmm. It's to get people. That's how actually the whole structure works. You want the PM to be talking about you. You want everyone to be talking about you. That's part of her growth.
And he found a way earlier this week, I think the Prime Minister, to draw these niche issues into a more comfortable turf for him. And that was to say, when it comes to fuel security, you know, I've gone around to Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei. Could Pauline Hanson do that? We're talking about, you know, a couple of big Muslim nations there. How would she deal with Indonesia? These sorts of, you know, legitimate questions that have an impact on fuel security as a good policy outcome for Australia. How would she be able to navigate these sorts of relationships given the sort of stuff she talks about? So it was a way for the Prime Minister to safely talk about these sorts of issues.
Yeah, it was. And today she addressed that, actually. The idea of that was put to her, actually, at the press club. And she thinks we're too reliant on all of them, David.
Yep, we need to dig, baby, dig. She put it, to borrow the drill, baby, drill Trump phrase. Clearly, finding enough oil, drilling it, refining it, building enough refinery, all of this would not happen overnight. So I think she did acknowledge that in the interim, yes, we are going to have to rely on those imports. Not to mention the price of doing all of that too, just to be clear. I'm not ignoring that.
Even start on the sort of budgeting for some of the things she says. That's it for Politics Now today. David, you're back on Saturday. What are you doing?
Not sure yet. It's only, Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, nah.
But tune
week
in.
Is young.
It'll be fun.
Tomorrow, Annabelle Crabb and I will be with you on the party room. We'll mop up this and lots of other things too. Mel Clark will join me for Question Time on Friday. Send voice notes to the party room at abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you, PK.